Think your pitch could make it across the plate at Busch Stadium? Well, prove it by winning Hot Shots First Pitch Sweepstakes this summer. Qualify for your chance by coming to any of the 12 Hot Shots locations and swipe your MVP card for a chance to win a variety of prizes in addition to throwing out the first pitch, like a pair of tickets to Cards games, Grizzly coolers, gift cards, and free food. Don't have a Hot Shots MVP card? Ask your server on the next stop in. Hot Shots, St. Louis, home for all the games all the time for 25 years.
Welcome back to the Ryan Kelly Morning After. Now, back to Tim, Jim, and Doug, live from the Gateway Buick GMC Studios on CBS Sports, 105.7 HD2 FM, 920 AM, and InsideSTL.com.
Out of blue.
Oh man, this week Wednesday's sick.
Out of blue. It's Ryan Kelly Morning After, CBS Sports, 105.7 HD2 FM, InsideSTL.com, live from the Gateway Buick GMC Studios. Timothy Michael McCurdy, Judy Cat Hayes, Douglas Elvin Vaughn with you, the Sea Monster on the ones and twos, and he has produced a program that features Kurt Schilling on our Tease Farms Captain's Log in about a half hour, and then Jill Cassidy at 9 o'clock, winner of the Bomber O'Brien's up-and-coming adult film starlet. She wins yesterday. She's on the show the next day. Cause and effect.
Needs to be a trophy. Trophy needed to be sent to her home.
You pick porn stars, people make money.
You're supposed to repeat that two or three times.
I don't have the energy.
I make picks, you make money. I make picks, you make money. Behind the glass, Peyton, our intern Madison, and the Plow Padre. Evil Calvin just texted this in at 314-880-0808. Tim, can you either tweet a picture of Madison or post one on the Facebook fan page?
No, we can't. No.
Evil Calvin.
She's a very pretty girl, which is why we're not going to post a picture.
Madison, how do you feel about that request that comes from Evil Calvin?
Just the name itself is enough to give you pause. You don't have to do it, Madison.
I mean,
no.
It doesn't really bother
me. Let me tell you this. You don't know the kind of evil vile that will be coming your way if you allow any personal information or even a picture of yourself out there on the fan page or via the Twitter. So I
trust your input. Yeah,
yeah. I'm very old. I've seen a
We're
lot
like
of
parents people. Taking care of you, Madison.
Right, right. I'd say no thanks to that.
Okay, settled.
All right, Doug.
One thing, if a video would be easier, but a picture, people can do all kinds of things with a picture.
Well, video, what?
I mean, if there was a short video clip. You can't Photoshop things with video clips like they do. You know what they do with a picture here.
The point is, any image of her out there would fall into the hands of very loyal listeners and great Americans, but also a handful of bad apples that happen to be despicable and vile.
Mm-hmm. And I'm just saying it'd be easier for them to do despicable and vile things with a still photograph than it would be.
Well, you can take video and you can freeze a frame and you can do as you will, you know, Photoshop that way, too.
Oh, they couldn't be that vile.
Well, it's taking a screen cap of a piece of video. And then you have a picture. It's the same thing.
Of course, one of your listeners knows the schedule of Larry Flint so well that he knows when a 50-year-old midget is going to take the stage. Mm-hmm. Only this show. That comes from Ears Bleeding. What a wonderful text. Sea Monster, if I'm not mistaken, for text of the day. Let me take a look at it. Because I wanted to give away two of the Cardinal tickets. These are tickets that are seven rows, if I can do this. I'm calling an audible at the line here, but I'm that good. Two of the tickets, seven rows behind the Padres dugout tonight. You'll get a bird's eye view of Matt Kemp and Will Myers for text of the day, and then two of the other box seats, seven rows behind the dugout for email of the day. Is that possible? Can I do that? Do I have that power?
I believe you do, Tim.
Nice. Nice. So that's a great prize. Kind enough, one of our business partners, I guess, lack of a better term, had four box seats, seven rows behind the Padres dugout available. Asked if we would like them yesterday when we were all together. Mm-hmm. And I said, yeah, why don't we give them to the great Americans who listen to this radio show? So, text of the day and email of the day, a little more important today.
Voice went up there,
yep,
Doug.
For the 7:15 game. So, the second game. So, it'll be seven rows back at the Padres dugout.
It's a heck of a prize.
Yeah, no, I'm excited about it. Plus,
those
a free roast beef
like,
sandwich.
Those tickets are like $120 a piece, I think.
Do you have them there on you, Seamaster? I thought they were more than that.
I don't know.
Can I have those tickets? I'd love to take my daughters, Sasha and Malia. Thanks, Melania Trump. That comes from KG in O-Town.
I think they're busy. They're in Cleveland. They can watch an Indians game.
Kurt Schilling, 8:30. Jill Cassidy coming up at 9 o'clock. Now, what happened last night? I didn't see this, but I saw Charlie was upset about it on Twitter. When Ben Carson was speaking, I bailed. I didn't stick around for it. But I guess with our Maggie O'Brien's fun with audio, you have this for me, Plow Padre. Let me take a look.
It's a minute long, so...
dig in. Yep. Minute of Ben Carson.
Okay, that's fine. Go ahead and hit the lever, Plowsy.
Now, interestingly enough, let me tell you something about Saul Alinsky. He wrote a book called Rules for Radicals. On the dedication page, it acknowledges Lucifer, the original radical who gained his own kingdom. Now, think about that. This is a nation where our founding document, the Declaration of Independence, talks about certain inalienable rights that come from our Creator. This is a nation where our Pledge of Allegiance says we are one nation under God. This is a nation. This is a nation where every coin in our pocket and every bill in our wallet says, in God we trust. So are we willing to elect someone as president who has as their role model somebody who acknowledges Lucifer? Think about that.
It's like Deke Dotum. Think about it. You think that he did that whole spiel to get around to the think about it? It worked for Dotum.
I don't understand the point. I mean, don't get me wrong. I know it's at a high level, but what was going on there?
Here's what it is. Saul Alinsky is a progressive who apparently factored in Satan, and now he's trying to portray Hillary Clinton, who has studied and written about Saul Alinsky as somehow
she did like a college thesis on it or something.
And that was done last year?
Rules for Radicals, as it were.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't stick around for Ben either.
You waited till the restless lady capped off the evening?
I flipped around, and I just because every time they show the crowd, and honestly, it's a guy on his phone or someone else looking to see if there's a hoagie stand.
They were saying that... Like I said, the producing of the whole thing is odd. If anything, you'd want Tiffany Trump, the 22-year-old daughter of Donald Trump, and Donald J. Trump to kind of cap off, or Donald Trump Jr., excuse me, to cap off the evening, and then to have Donald Trump Jr. speak following Tiffany. I didn't see Tiffany's speech either, but I understand she did a great job too, 22 years old. Again, this is in delivery, not necessarily content. Some people may have liked the content, some people didn't. I didn't see the speech. I saw Donald Trump Jr.'s speech. And then to... Then have the crescendo followed by Ben Carson and pointing out that coins say in God we trust, so therefore I guess, I don't know actually what he was trying to say, and then the Young and the Restless lady, perhaps if I were putting the batting order together, I would maybe leave the Young and the Restless lady off the roster, maybe Ben Carson in the 8 o'clock Central Time hour, and then have Tiffany and Donald Trump Jr. And then cap it off because the CNN post-convention coverage was saying it's somewhat awkward because people started leaving after the Donald Trump Jr. speech, and these people are talking to empty rows, and that is not how these conventions usually end. They usually end with a high point at right as the night ends.
I heard somebody say they were 8 minutes short. All the speeches combined came up to about 8 minutes short. So they thought they were ending instead of having the Young and the Restless actress talk for the last 5 or 6 minutes. They didn't think that was going to get on. They thought the networks would be done by 11 Eastern.
Oh, so she
Central.
Wasn't supposed to get that primetime
spot?
She
was supposed to speak.
Right.
Yeah, but it was supposed to come after the networks had wrapped it up and signed off. They went a little light.
But that's where you have an ace up the sleeve. That's where you have like Gallagher. And you're like, we're running a little short, but here's Gallagher, and he starts smashing watermelons.
Well, that's where
your crescendo.
That's where they need a really polished MC. They need pick somebody. They need Rush Limbaugh or Hugh Hewitt or Dana Lash or some big conservative radio person who could tap dance and kill 6 or 7 minutes if they needed to and introduce the guest the speakers coming on. I just think that that would help the thing flow a little bit better.
You're probably right.
But I will say this about the Trump campaign. One of the things that has worked is that they don't do things by the book, and it seems almost like it's a homemade campaign, and it's worked. So, you know, you can critique anything, but, you know, a campaign that no one thought would get off the ground, that doesn't have the same sort of infrastructure, boots on the ground, that kind of ground game, has done pretty well. So give them their due.
The Chris Christie speech was the highlight of the evening, I thought.
I didn't even see it.
Oh, you'll have to go back and watch that. He had the crowd chanting, "Lock her up." Lock her up. My particular favorite part of the evening.
I wish that when there was that anti-Never Trump group that was trying to, you know, and it's all, I guess it's all posturing for rules for the next election, not this one. It didn't impact whether or not Trump would be the nominee, but I guess there was a lot of back and forth on the floor. Now, to me, that would have been entertaining to see.
Another good part of the night, I like to flip back and forth from Fox to MSNBC. It's right next to each other on the cable, and you get wildly different perspectives. At one point on MSNBC, somebody says to Rachel Maddow, you know, I've been saying for a long time about how she kind of talks out of the side of her mouth. They said, "I don't know how you can say that with a straight face." And she says, "I haven't had a straight face in years."
She self-deprecated it.
Yes.
And you enjoy her now.
Now you're ignored.
No, I do not.
It is funny. If you flip on Fox to see their comment, "It's the greatest convention ever," and then you go MSNBC, "It's the worst convention ever." And you know, when the Democrats have their convention, it'll be the reverse.
Exact opposite.
Now, see, I watch CNN, and they're very complimentary, including the people who would be on the left of the speeches, even though they may not agree with the content. So I don't watch I never watch MSNBC, honestly. I'll occasionally watch Fox News. Some of it's unintentional comedy. Some of it's just to understand what the perspective is and also what they're trying to advance to the audience. But, you know, CNN has, I think anyway, and I'm sure you probably think Fox News is down the middle, but CNN has, you know, specifically people from the left and the right. Our friend S.E. Cupp was on there. They have two people who either Trump, they're, you know, avowed Trump supporters and worked on his campaign. And, you know, and then David Axelrod
like
on there.
Surrogates. I like what they call surrogates.
Yeah, I mean,
Trump
there was a
surrogates.
Blatant one. I can't remember what her name was. Carpenter was her last name, but there was a Cruz one. And, you know, they have the Kayleigh McEnany, is that her name, that's on along with the other gentleman who's always right to the left of I guess either Wolf Blitzer or Anders Cooper. And they're complimentary, again, of the speeches, even if they don't necessarily agree with the content. And then some of them, of course, agree with the content. For example, Donald Trump Jr. is an actual registered Republican, which is why he was able to serve as a delegate and put his father over the top last night, which whether you're on board with him or not, and I'm not, but I understand obviously millions of Americans are, that was pretty cool that he was able to do that, and he was emotional about it. And I thought that was a cool moment, whether you're on board with him or not. And that his speech, as far as his delivery goes, was outstanding. And then also you have a 22-year-old woman going out there and doing that. That's also an impressive, for the purpose of oratory skills, impressive. Content to each their own.
Even his wife, I mean, that supposedly that was her fifth language. And, you know, she's never spoken publicly like that. I mean, that's got to be terrifying. And my thing is this. This is what I'm so – I hate both parties right now. You can have disagreements on policy, what's best for the country. It doesn't mean just because you disagree with someone, they're awful human beings. And it seems if you have team ideology, you have to hate the other person if they disagree with you. Like, if you're a Democrat, you're watching their speakers, you're going to, you know, there's things to nitpick, whatever. But most of the speakers are legitimate, professional people.
Well, the thing that I find, because and it goes along the lines of what you're saying right there, is most of the time, and by most I'm not saying 51%, I would actually put it probably closer to the 90 percentile, before an analyst speaks, you know what they're going to say, at least whether it's going to be positive or negative. And that's why in this particular election cycle, S.E. Cupp to me has been, you know, there's a lot of critical thought applied to where she's coming from, whether I agree with it or disagree with it. And she doesn't just fall in line with what her political party is.
Team
right.
ideology.
And so therefore, that to me is intriguing commentary, as opposed to, okay, we're going to go to the Trump surrogate, we're going to now go to Van Jones, and you already know where they're going to say, And so, therefore, it's just kind of like, okay, get me to somebody who actually is going to speak honestly. And like I said, Axelrod, I understand, he worked on Obama's campaign. He was a key part of the administration before leaving. However, he actually has experience in the White House.
He's interesting.
And he's a very sharp guy, whether you agree with Barack Obama or disagree with him. Again, that's what I'm trying to convey.
He's a guy,
I'm doing it in horrible
fashion. I enjoy listening to him, even though, you know, he's on a team already. Same with, like, Newt Gingrich, who's, I think, a very smart guy. He's on a team. But here's the thing. You could say, well, it shouldn't be the name-calling, you know. But Donald Trump is the king of the name-calling, mm-hmm. you know. So I guess if the Democrats want to rip everything at the convention, rightfully or wrongfully, you can't complain.
Oh, they do their own name-calling.
Because Trump has taken that to a new level. You know, like, all right, you're a presidential candidate now. Stop with the crooked Hillary.
Yeah. He's given all of his opponents have earned a nickname in his mind.
He doesn't have to
but
do that.
They fire right back. I mean, they've called everybody's a racist on the other side, according to the Democrats.
I agree. I think it's awful. Just because you disagree with that person, it doesn't make them this, that, or the other thing. You just disagree. Now, sometimes you have a personal problem with someone. That's a different story. But generally speaking, the people that will be speaking at the Democratic convention are smart people. You can disagree with them. You can have certain people you just find vile, like I don't like Hillary very much. But you have to get away from that. You can't rip everything nonstop.
Joe is on the Appliance Discounter phone lines. Good morning, Joe.
Hello, Joe.
Good morning, gentlemen. How are you doing?
We're fine. You?
Good. This question is kind of for Tim, I guess.
Of course.
Tim, I'm wondering, you've mentioned in the previous couple of weeks that right now, probably Gary Johnson has your vote. I'm wondering what specifically about Hillary that's kind of turning you off? Is it just
what was that?
Not
what specifically?
Exciting?
What about Hillary did you say? What you said? What specifically? And I didn't understand a couple words.
That's turning you off. Is it just that she's not exciting like some of the other candidates might be, or is there like I've watched Marr's show, you know, frequently, and he mentions kind of jokingly that Hillary's slogan is kind of how he feels. I'm ready for Hillary. I'm not excited about her. I'm not pissed about her, but I'm ready for her. That's kind of like how I find myself feeling as well. But if it's just because she's not exciting, I don't know. Is that kind of how you feel?
We talked about it, and I realized probably, I mean, I guess I could look at the numbers, that in the 9 o'clock hour, it's probably the least listened to of the 3 hours of the show, and so I know that some people look at it. But we talked about it a little bit on Monday, if I'm not mistaken, because somebody asked me a question, because Barack Obama's policies are similar to what Hillary Clinton's platform is, so then why would I not be as apt to vote for Hillary Clinton as I was for Barack Obama in 2008, 2012, and I would be if he were able to run in 2016. And my answer to that, and it's a horrible answer because it's dealing in the abstract and it's strictly intuitive as opposed to, you know, full of data, is it's a read. And the read is the following. Who do I think, again, it's strictly intuitive, so it's really not a fair analysis whatsoever, but it's intuitive. Who do I think, when they're all by themselves and they have a decision to make, is going to act in the best interests of the country? And not necessarily in the best interests of themselves, their legacy, or peers. And so that, for example, is why I thought in 2008, before the Palin pick, that we had two great choices in John McCain and Barack Obama, because I believed both would act in what's the best interest of the country, even if on some elements I didn't agree with John McCain or some elements I didn't agree with Barack Obama. And I fear, unfortunately, that I can't feel that way about Hillary Clinton. I wish I could, and I think she will win, but I'm certainly not, I wouldn't move all in on it. And from something you brought up, the cat, I thought that was an incredibly valid point, with the Supreme Court nominations that will take place here over the next 4 years, and there will be multiple, I would expect, at least one we know of. From that standpoint, I certainly would want a Democrat in. I would prefer it not to be Hillary Clinton. So that's a very long-winded answer with no data behind it, but that's my reasoning.
Makes sense. I appreciate it. I missed the show Monday, so I apologize, but thanks for the time.
All right. God bless America. There you go. Oh, I'm sorry. You want me to bring it?
Tell us what you like about Hillary.
Are you there still, Joe?
Yes.
What is it that you like about Hillary?
Nothing. That's kind of my point, that nothing excites me about her, but there's nothing about her where I'm just like, oh, God, I, you know. no way. She just kind of like, yeah.
What about the lying to Congress? What about that?
That's something where I just look at it and think, yeah, it doesn't really affect my life,
really?
Like one bit.
You don't mind,
like,
that she lies to Congress and is going to be the president.
Like,
you don't mind that. You don't mind that she changes her mind to pander whatever audience that she wants to get a vote from. For example, in 2006, she went on television and said that she thinks that we have to do whatever it takes to stop the flow of illegal immigrants to Mexico, even if that includes building barriers.
Mexico.
Even if it includes building a wall. She said this in 2006. And now, since that view is considered racist because a Republican said it, now she's changed 180 degrees. That kind of stuff doesn't bother you?
I kind of put that in the category of every politician has the capability of doing that, and it doesn't really affect my life. Like, they're all kind of will lie to get what they want, to get votes, blah, blah, blah. And I don't know. Anybody that's willing to run for that kind of office, I feel like, has that personality trait of, I'll do what I got to do, throw whoever I got to throw under the bus.
Well, that's setting the bar pretty low for someone that you want to be the president.
I would argue that the bar is pretty low for everyone that's in politics right now. I mean,
would you ever vote for? Would you consider voting for Trump at all?
Probably. I don't know. Probably not. I guess I would say I'd consider it, but he doesn't. Well, let's put it this way: whoever gets voted into office between the two of them. Is it really going to affect my life that much? I would argue probably not.
Well, it might. It might, because whoever gets voted in is probably going to eventually nominate three or four Supreme Court justices, and their decisions could affect your life.
Yeah.
They might make a decision on whether to go to war or not. That could affect your life. If there's anybody in the United States who could affect your life, it's the president.
So from a policy standpoint, I would say I lean to the left a little bit. So on that, when you're asking me that question, like Tim mentioned, Hillary's policies are pretty much in line with President Obama, who I'm a supporter of. So from that aspect, if you're asking me who I'm going to trust to support, you know.
Do you think it's a good idea to open the borders to like 500,000 Syrian refugees where a lot of ISIS supporters are living?
Where they can't be vetted properly?
Think that's a good idea?
But the USA isn't like Europe where people are just running across the border to Syrian refugees. It's kind of a much more difficult task for them to get to America than it is in Europe.
Not much. But you think it'd be a good idea for the country to allow about 500,000 of them in?
It is much different, Doug. They've got to get on a plane, which is, and that, or on a boat to get to the United States. Like, there are lists.
I think that's a legitimate concern, because you've already had the head of Homeland Security, the head of the FBI, saying there's certain people we can't vet. We have to be careful because when they come from failed states, that affects our vetting process, and we're letting people in that we're not sure about. I think that's a legitimate concern. On the other hand, if I may, you know, Donald Trump has supported Hillary in the past, said very nice things that she would. I think he even said she'd make a good president. He had some views that were dead in lockstep with the Democrats.
Right, but all politicians views change, do that. As we saw in 2000, her views change entirely on illegal immigration from Mexico.
I agree, but Donald Trump has also. He has.
Yeah, Donald Trump has kind of confused me during the cycle, because if you had asked, you know, people that were close to him before this, I think he even identified as a Democrat previously, and now all of a sudden he's...
He said he identifies more as a Democrat. He did.
So, I mean, that kind of goes back to my point about politicians. Like, they'll do whatever they got to do to get into office or to please whoever they need to please.
And I realize that's a very... I mean, it's a populist kind of statement, and that it's an easy... I just don't... I mean, certainly I think there are a number of them that do, both locally and statewide, certainly, and, of course, the federal level. But I do think there are some who I believe Barack Obama is one, actually, and I know that's not popular, especially in Missouri. But I do believe. I think he's a very good man and has been a very successful president in this label. He's been a failure. His approval rating is the same as Ronald Reagan's at this point in his presidency. But you know,
well,
I
approval ratings are going to fall in line with how many Democrats are asked and how many Republicans are asked. If you ask a Democrat, they're going to say yeah.
Okay.
And there's
how do you
more
explain
Democrats.
George W. Bush's 35% approval rating? If they're are you saying they're 35% Republicans?
I don't know. I don't know how many more there are than that. There's probably low 40s or something, and there's some
but
people
your premise
who are upset
is
with
that
the
it's
war.
Locked in line with yeah
right.
Well, I mean,
I would
it's a pretty
say
legitimate thing to be upset about.
Yeah, so that's why he lost some of his approval rating. I would say approval rating would be especially in these times. It's probably almost entirely locked in with how many Democrats are asked and how many Republicans are asked.
Right, well,
I don't think there are a lot of Republicans would say yeah, we love the job he's done. And I think damn near every Democrat would say, yeah, we love it.
My overall premise being the following, that I think he's a good man who is a smart man who has acted in the best interest of the country. And perhaps because he's such an idealist, that has not worked well in playing well with Congress. And so I don't think it's a case. And I would have said the same about John McCain. That's why I was so disappointed in the Palin pick. And so I don't think it's, I mean, I understand, and a lot of people would just say it, but I don't like to just advance the narrative if I have any ability to just kind of say, I don't think that's necessarily the case that, that all will say whatever it takes in order to get elected. I certainly would say that a lot of them would, but I don't think all would. So that's my point on that. Joe, thanks a lot for the call. We have a bunch of other people that want to get on. Kurt Schilling's going to be on here in about 5 minutes. Yeah, Steve.
Hello, Steve.
Hey, boys.
Yeah.
How you doing?
We're fine. You?
Oh, not too bad. The Republicans will ruin this campaign again. They can't elect a president because of the damn religious right. I mean, Trump didn't even know what an evangelical was before, like, last week, and now he's mentioned it, like, 85 times. I just hope if he would run like McCain, if they both would, and same with Romney, they have a lot of moderate views that they're not allowed to express because the religious right gets involved with the Republicans, and there's no way they'll win the election. Hillary will win the election because they know how to run a campaign on the Democratic side.
Well, but when you, when you go to vote, are you really going to be swayed by that?
I'm not. However,
okay, then why is everybody else?
Well, people get sick of hearing about Obama wasn't born in this country. They get sick of hearing about Hillary's a liar, Hillary should go to jail. It's already been decided. It's not going to change. Quit harping on it. People who are in the middle who could vote for either Trump or Hillary are not going to vote for Trump because they think Hillary should go to jail. They don't care.
I think that's a great point. And it, because you're talking about the future of the Republican Party here and the what they're offering up as a future. And right now their campaign is Hillary should be in jail. I agree with that.
Yeah. The religious right campaigning works for someone like Todd Akin because he's in an area where there's a lot of Christians and that's what they want. You know, but for as a nation, there's just as many non-Christians as there are Christians. Well,
how much religion have you heard really in this campaign? Who's talking about it?
I've heard Donald Trump say evangelical at least 50 times. Haven't you, Doug?
But what type of religious discussions is he having?
Ben Carson did
it last
night.
He doesn't even know what he's saying. He doesn't even know what he's saying, Doug. All he's saying is, you end up, we're big with the evangelicals. We're big with the evangelicals. Have you heard him say that?
I have, but I'm saying I haven't heard a whole lot of specifically of religious conversation come up.
Well, I've heard it, and it shouldn't even be part of it. Because those people are going to vote Republican no matter what. Either that or they're going to vote for, you know, Pat Robertson or some other idiot that's on TV.
Well, I don't think you can say every religious person is going to vote Republican. I don't think you can say that at all.
Doug, you're underestimating it. The religious right in the Republican Party is a minority in the Republican Party, but it's a vocal minority that tends to sway the vote.
There's an awful lot of blacks in America who are very religious, and they're not going to vote Republican.
They're not religious, right, Doug?
But they're religious.
Are they Republican?
No.
But that's what I'm saying, Doug.
But you're saying only the religious people from the Republicans are a turnoff, but the religious people from the Democrats are not.
They don't put it out there like that, Doug. The religious right runs the whole Republican campaign, and that's the problem. They're never going to win with that.
Well, you may be overstating that just a bit. I don't know that they run the entire campaign.
I'm not. Doug, what did if I it, think Romney could have won if he would have run a campaign that was more like he ran the state of Massachusetts? Same with McCain. If he would have, you know, called upon his senatorial record and not picked some nutbag as a vice presidential candidate who is part of that religious right watching over Russia from Alaska, then we would have won that election, too.
What?
I usually vote for Republican, but I'm voting for Gary Johnson. I can't vote for either of these two morons.
But what religious topics are coming up? Are you talking about abortion? Is that it?
Yes.
Okay, I don't know that the abortion issue is running the entire campaign. I don't think that it is. I don't get that sense at all.
Doug, it's more about
Homeland Security. It's more about the war against ISIS. It's about the economy. I don't hear anybody pounding their fist about we must stop abortion at all costs.
Keep thinking that, Doug.
Well,
that
what, just show me. Tell me where. Tell me where it's happening. Because I haven't seen it. I've seen every speech in the Republican convention so far. I don't think I've heard the word abortion yet. Maybe someone has said it. I haven't heard it.
They don't have to say it, Doug. It's the religious right that runs the Republican campaign.
Well,
you don't believe that, Doug?
No, I don't. I don't. That's not their big campaign issue in this campaign. Has not been we must stop abortion. It's been about security. It's been about illegal immigration. It's been about the economy. It's been about fighting ISIS. It hasn't been about abortion.
Why did he pick Pence as a vice presidential candidate?
Because he thought he'd be a good compliment to him.
Shit. Because he's really
right. Yeah. So you gotta be careful with the words. Anyway, Kurt Schilling's going to be on here momentarily. See, I think Steve had a valid point. I don't think he delivered it in a very effective way, because the campaign's certainly not about abortion. You know, it's not what it is, but it's a big part of the quote-unquote base. The last three winners of the Iowa caucuses on the Republican side have been Ted Cruz, Rick Santorum, and Mike Huckabee, and there's
a
consistent
theme. But that's a small state.
Right.
Pence was picked. I mean, everyone knows he was in order to boost the conservative credentials of Trump, and also
right.
to reach out to evangelicals.
But what my point on bringing up the Iowa caucuses is this, is that in order to get in the game, you have to be competitive there, and then if you don't win it, you better damn well do well in New Hampshire. Otherwise, you're in big trouble, because after that, you go to South Carolina. And so how I would argue the point that Steve, in my opinion, didn't effectively argue is that the nominee process, as it's currently structured from the Republican side, forces you to go far right on social issues when some people otherwise wouldn't be that. Now, Donald Trump won the election, even though he's proclaiming religion right now. I think everybody would go, okay, we understand what he's doing. It's not really his thing.
Right.
But to say that the campaign is about the abortion issue is...
Republican side, you've got they're getting almost all the black vote, which are mostly Southern Baptists. As far as I know, the Baptists don't preach that abortion is okay. Then they've got the Hispanic vote, almost all Roman Catholic. I know for sure the Roman Catholics aren't in favor of abortion. So who's being hypocritical here?
Stephen Wildwood just texted in, thanks, Tim, that's what I meant. You're the greatest.
Oh, for heaven's
sake. Lemming.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's our pleasure to welcome to the Appliances Counter Phone Lines, Kurt Schilling. Kurt, good morning.
Hey, what's up, guys?
We were just discussing the Republican convention. What are your?
I think you're wrong. I think you're wrong.
What parts do you not?
No, I think right under the surface, every bit of this election has to do with abortion, because I think that whoever's the next president is going to appoint at least one, if not two, to three justices by the time they're done.
And so you think every bit of the election has to do with abortion?
No. I'm being facetious, but I think it's an enormously big piece for
the
some
Supreme
people.
Court piece is a big piece.
Yeah.
No, I'd agree with you big time.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just don't see how people are really that concerned about the abortion issue.
And you're right. It's not something that I think people are listing as the top two or three reasons that this election is important. You know, I think it's the safety of our country and families and, you know, the economy. And it's always different for different people. But make no mistake about it, you guys know this, that given what we know and what's happened in the last couple of years, you know, after the passing of Justice Scalia, that appointment's going to be enormous. But when you look at, you know, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who seems to fall asleep every 14 seconds, you know, there probably will be another one, if not two appointments during the next 1 to 2 terms.
See, to me, I don't like either candidate, and I'm not ready to leap to a libertarian at this point. But I'm telling myself that my vote will probably be coming down to who I think will elect non-activist justices. That's what I'm looking for. I haven't decided who I'm going to vote for, but it may just come down to that for me.
I don't mean this personally, but I can't figure out how anybody can be there. Given what we've watched, you know, one of the most evil, corrupt, lying, felonious, despicable human beings I've ever seen in Hillary Clinton, and that her husband, everything about her, is to me goes against what this country stands for. And then, you know, you have Mr. Trump, who is off the cuff and speaks from the heart, whether you like it or not, you kind of get what you get. And, you know, I think the challenge is for people that aren't looking to him, it's he doesn't act presidential. And that's not a small thing, I don't believe, either. I think that we hold that office to be, well, you'd like to think that, but the last 7.5 years, I don't know that we have, but you hold that office to be above the fray a lot of times. And he's wading down into getting, you know, mad at the media and people. And, you know, I'd like to see him start acting much more of the leader we need.
Kurt Schilling is our guest here on the Appliances Counter phone lines. This time last year, Kurt, 12 months ago, when there were 17 people in the mix for the Republican nomination, were you a Donald Trump guy at that time, or was there somebody else? Who was the other person you liked?
Dr. Carson.
Okay.
That was who
And why do you like Ben Carson?
I just felt that he was a man of strong moral conviction. You know, I felt that he was much like I feel Mike Pence. I feel like he was a Christian, a God-fearing guy, a constitutionalist. You know, I want the Constitution to matter. I don't want a guy in the White House or a woman who thinks, well, I don't like how the Constitution reads, so I'm just going to pass an executive order. I think that was not how this was set up, and it wasn't set up to work that way. And, you know, I think we're looking at here's what I talk to people about and try to discuss this is, and you look at the rise of terrorism globally, and you look at, you know, the increase in this country of terrorist activity domestically, and what would Hillary Clinton have said or done to make you believe she could make this, it's not going to be more of the same? I say nothing. I believe Mr. Trump has the right conviction. I believe he has the right idea. I think I've known him for about 13 years. And the one thing that I do know is that for all the bluster, and he talks and he annoys people, and that's fine. But at the end of the day, he surrounds himself with, for the most part, except for the speechwriter, obviously, for his wife, he surrounds himself with really smart people. And he's a great, if you listen to Lieutenant General Flynn talk about him last week, he talked about how impressed he was of a listener, and he asked really smart questions, and he listens, and he gets it, takes advice, and I think that's huge.
One of the unique things that I've heard as a theme in watching, I would say I've probably watched 50% of the convention coverage, including some of the off-peak hours, Kurt, is a number of people say when he's not at the podium and not addressing crowds, he's actually a different person and probably, quote-unquote, more presidential. He's, which I find to be, if anything, you would think it might be the other way, but that's what these people who know him privately are saying.
Well, think about this. What was one of the biggest complaints about President Bush? He was a horrible public speaker. People couldn't stand the way he was in public and the way he spoke in public. And having been around the man, there was no one I've ever been around who acted more presidential in person. No one ever. No one who loved this country more than he did, loved his soldiers. And I think, knowing what I know about Mr. Trump, it's very much the same way. You sit down with the guy and you're like, okay, but I think that he's not a versed politician, right? I mean, that's one of the reasons why he's so attractive. One of the reasons why every time the left or the right goes bonkers, he gets more voters, because he isn't one of them. And I think that not being one of them forces him, or not forces him, but it reveals the fact that he isn't a practiced politician. And that's not, we've turned that into a good thing where we want it to be and a bad thing where we don't want it to be.
I wish that he would stop with the crooked Hillary. I mean, that's just a little, that annoys me, because it's
what?
In the beginning, you want to separate yourself from a huge field. It was a clown show. But now let's get away from that. But here's the other thing, too. I wonder if he's a bit of a huckster. You know, that's what people on the left say about him. But he has talked about identifying as a Democrat in the past. He's He preys on Hillary Clinton in the past, and I wonder, you're a staunch conservative. How do you look at him through that prism?
Well, I look at him, he's an entrepreneur, right? I mean, isn't he the embodiment of an entrepreneur? Although he came into money, I mean, he had a little bit of a head start, but but you do what you do. I don't think he's lied. Do you feel like he's lied about any of that? I don't. I mean, he's been pretty forthcoming about why he did it. It was that because he knew that, well, I think he knew that Hillary could be bought. And he was working to be successful. I'm not condoning it. I'm just saying I don't have any misgivings about what their relationship was. I mean, he invited her to the wedding, the Clintons to the wedding. You were talking about one of the most powerful businessmen in the world who centers himself in New York, and that's where she governed. So,
yeah, but even when he said he identified more as a Democrat, he said that in the past.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean,
you think he's just playing the system? You think that as a businessman, he's just playing the system?
Yeah, yeah. I don't know if he's playing the system. I don't think he's lying. I think he probably did have it. Although it's hard for me to envision someone that is that has built their entire lives on capitalism, identifying as Democratic. But again, I'm not going to wade into that stuff. For the most part, I want to know what I'm getting now, not what I had 30 years ago. Because if we play that game with all of these candidates, we're never going to vote for anybody.
Right.
Because they all do and say things that we don't agree with. And it's that myth of the perfect candidate. People are still looking for it. It doesn't exist. I mean, I was enormously fond and friendly with the Bush family, but there were things about him I didn't agree with. I worked with ALS. I didn't agree with his stance on stem cell research. But I never questioned where he stood when I asked him. And I feel like Mr. Trump's kind of the same way. And I don't think Mike Pence is a face or a body to fill the ticket. I think he's somebody that he picked because he knows that he's going to have to navigate some waterway that he's never been in before. And I think he trusts that Governor Pence would do that.
What kind of a chance do you give Trump for winning?
I think he wins in a landslide.
Wow.
Really? Wow.
I just don't think when this country all is said and done, I trust the people in this country to do the right thing. And there's everything about her is the wrong thing. She represents everything we hate about government, everything we hate about the elite. She's above the law. Everything that we dislike and hate about what this country's become is embodied in what she is. I think she, and I, as a Christian, I hate to speak like this about somebody, but I always look at people by some of the things that they say, and there are people that say things and do things that they can never take back and will always reveal who they are. Who on this planet, after being in charge of a group of people that were killed overseas at our embassy, who goes to the families and then lies to them about why they were killed, number one, which maybe I understand, but then turns around and calls the families of those people liars? How despicable of a human being do you have to be to do something like that? And basically on national TV calls them out as liars, as phonies. That she just, and then, you know, I'm reading everything I can read to make sure that, I'm not making this stuff up, but everything that she's done, I mean, the money for the foundation and all the stuff she's done from a foreign perspective, you know, everybody talks about her foreign policy experience. She sucks at it. I don't care if she has experience. Having experience and sucking at something is not a qualification.
Kurt Schilling is our guest, is an example of the polarization in this election cycle. I would argue the most I've seen in my lifetime. I was born in 76. One text says, agreed that Trump wins in a landslide. I've been saying the same thing. And then right under that, a landslide, get this guy off the air. Awful.
Well,
really
all
dumb.
You need to do is go back and talk about the Brexit polls. Right? I mean, the media in the UK was trying to make a case. Hey, you don't even need to go out and vote.
Right.
Remain is going to win by 10 to 15%.
Right, you're right. And then a number of people just voted for it just for the hell of it, and then we saw what wound up with someone. So we're taking a look at the polls right now. So when you see the numbers now in Hillary Clinton, I would gather we're on the same page. If I were to say from a national poll right now, it's approximately a 5, 6% lead. You expect Trump to get a bump off the convention just like Hillary will. What do you think will change over the next 3 to 4 months that would lead to a Trump landslide?
Well, I got to ask you guys, and if you know people outside of your circle, say so. I've not met anybody face to face in discussing that's going to vote for her. I think the numbers are very different than the numbers we're hearing, and I know that sounds conspiracy theorish and all that other stuff, but the liberal media has clearly got a motivated agenda right now. And it is, you know, I'll give you an example. I don't know if you guys heard about the MSNBC poll. They went online after the shooting in Orlando, and they did a survey, and it was around the Second Amendment. Do you feel that that United States citizens should be able to legally own firearms? And it blew up in their face. It was 119,000 for to 19,000 against. Yeah. And so that the poll, Fox ended up revealing the poll because MSNBC didn't publish it. I think that below the surface in the fraudulent media, I think that there is a festering anger, I think disappointment in where we are, and I think that we are going to have, you know, I think the 12 to 14 million Republicans that sat home won't sit home this time, and I think in New England, in Massachusetts, 44,000 people left the Democratic ticket to become Republicans or independents in the primary.
What about the Republicans? Because there is still an element of the never Trump crowd. A lot of conservatives just don't buy into Donald Trump, and they're going to need those votes as well. How does he get around that?
Well, you hope it. That's where I'm trusting and hoping that people do the right thing. Right? I mean, that's where you have to hope that they let them date. There is no other option besides Mr. Trump. She's not a realistic option for this country, because if she is, I don't know that we can. I'm not an Armageddon or a conspiracy theory doomsayer guy. There's no way we can survive four more years of this crap. No way. And I don't see that she said or done anything that would make anybody feel like, well, we'll be safer if she's in.
No, I'm looking at polls done yesterday. The LA Times has got Trump up by 1 point. NBC News poll released yesterday has Trump up by 1 point.
And you know how horribly bad they felt having to put that out there.
NBC, broke their heart, I'm sure.
Right, so my guess is it's probably more like 10 points.
Yeah, you know what, though? I think the Democrats are better at campaigning, and the Republicans just can't get out of their own way. And I think when it comes down to it, that Democratic machine, they're just better at it.
Well, here's the thing. They're better at it because they manipulate the campaign to what people want to hear and see and do. The Republican, the right side, the conservatism, the conservative party is about, you know, God, being a Christian, about having God in your life, and about loving your country and all the things that it stands for, about standing up for the history of this country, even though it has the warts it has. That never changes for true conservatives.
Now you're a religious guy. Now, what about the people that maybe would be attracted to Trump, or maybe are conservative but just aren't religious? I think there's an element of folks who feel alienated by putting religion at the forefront of the campaign.
Sure, well, but that's self-induced, because I don't know people that are pushing Christianity on anybody. I mean, we just spent 7.5 years with a guy who we're not sure if he's a Muslim or a follower of Islam or Christian. He said both, right?
When did he say he was a Muslim?
Or a Christian. He talked about his Muslim faith.
When did Barack Obama talk about his Muslim faith?
Well, that's, you know what? If I was sitting in front of my computer, I could tell you specifically, but it's not a hard thing to find. He talked about his Muslim faith, and not just once.
All right, we'll put our producers on that right now, because I've never heard that.
Get that soundbite, because it's a fascinating one.
Okay. I'm not familiar with that. Are you guys familiar with that soundbite?
No. I'm looking at something on YouTube right now that says Obama admits he is a Muslim.
Okay. Well.
On video, I haven't heard. It's on CNN.
Okay. Yeah, well, we'll look into it right now. But for the purpose of what the cat just asked you regarding religion and your answer was...
Yeah, listen, it's naive. As a Christian, my faith is... I'm not here to judge who you are and what you believe, who you sleep with, who you love, and all the other things. You know, my faith is strong, and you know, your faith is for you to deal with. And if I can help, I can help. If not, don't. You know, it's not. There are, and I'm using air quotes here. There are Christians who believe you do one thing one way, and if you don't do it that way, you're not a Christian, which goes against everything in the New Testament. So, you know, I'm not part of that. I don't believe it. Like, I'll give you an example. The Westboro Baptist Church. They're as Christian as the KKK, which is to say not at all. Mm-hmm. You know, but that's what people on the left will hold out as, well, look at these Christians. And I get it. I understand it. It's certainly, you know, fodder for the masses, but, you know, I'm not there with that.
In a country of 300 million people, you're going to have nut jobs on both sides.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Well, in a country with 1.2 million police officers, you're going to have some bad eggs, right?
Mm-hmm.
You can't – there's no legislation to stop morally bankrupt people. You can't pass a law. You can only hope to have a country free where those people can be put away and not rule like some of the countries overseas. But that's part of what we are, right? I mean, we're founded on all these things that allow us, you know, free will and the ability to think and say things that you can't say elsewhere around the world. Now, freedom isn't exclusive to us, but freedom from tyranny and freedom from a tyrannical government is what we were founded on. And, you know, there's obviously a big hullabaloo over the Second Amendment. And the argument there is, it feels to me like that is, if that simple argument can't be made sense of, which is, I have, as a citizen of this country, I have the right to keep and bear arms. And for the 99.9% of us, there are laws that prevent me from going and picking up. You can't buy a gun, neither you can buy a toy. And our president continues to put that line out there, and it's a lie. But that's one of the sounding boards for the left.
Kurt, one of the things that I think has rallied people to the Trump side, and this has been discussed, and I would imagine you would acknowledge it, it was discussed specifically as Ben Carson began his remarks last night, is a frustration, a backlash against what is deemed political correctness.
That phrase.
And yes, exactly, right up your alley with what transpired with ESPN. Do you feel like you were a victim of that?
I wasn't a victim. I'm not a victim. I worked for a very liberal company who didn't agree with my conservative perspective, my conservative viewpoint, and they selectively enforced memorandums and rules. You know, you have some of the most racist commentators in sports and in on that station, and Stephen A. Smith, Jemele Hill has said and done dumb stuff day after day, and I commented that I felt that men should use the men's room. And I commented that, you know, Islamic extremists are very much like the Nazi Party, which I don't know how many hundreds of people have commented after that in the news and whatever. But being a conservative is a very dangerous thing at ESPN. And that was made very clear to me. And, you know, my First Amendment rights were not abridged. I can say whatever I want. When you work for somebody else, you have to play by their rules or you don't get to play. And I didn't want to. I thought that they were very biased. I think that there was, you know, wrongful termination, absolutely. But you know what? That's the world we live in. That's, you know, it was a job. It was not one of my kids. So I'll move on.
Did you ever think we'd get to a point in this country where saying men shouldn't use the girls' room would be a controversial take?
Well, here's the thing. That's not what's getting controversial takes. If you look at the first thing that I ever said that caused a stir at ESPN, it was the comment around, they say 7 to 10% of Muslims are extremists. They said that like 7 to 10% of Germans were in the Nazi Party in the 1930s. I was comparing extremists to Nazis. If you look at every single liberal outlet that commented or chastised me for that, including ESPN, they removed the only word in that entire commentary that mattered, which was extremist. Take that word out, and it's an incredibly racist thing to say. And I'm not racist, so, I mean, it wasn't a racist comment. It was fact. The numbers back it up. They might be off a little bit, but that's the way it works. And, you know, it's the comment was around, hey, it doesn't take a majority. 10 people killed 3,000 people in 2001. It never takes a majority. It takes a silent majority versus a corrupt-leaning minority, a loud, vocal minority, and that's exactly what you have. Look at the transgender bathroom issue. I mean, my God, 0.1% of this country are transgender? That's fine. I don't care. Why do we have to be involving our government in bathrooms? Are you kidding me?
Were you always this passionate about political issues when you were playing, or did this something that came afterwards?
Yes. Towards the end of my career, yes.
What brought that on? September 11th? Would that be the tie-in?
Well, I don't know. Before that, I was involved, but that probably kicked it off to the degree that of which it is now. I had a reputation when I played of being someone who prepared and prepared as much, if not more, than anybody that played through video and studying and all this other stuff. And I don't approach this any differently. I jump the gun. I'll say things and react to things that before I need to take a look and see if they're true or not. But the more I've studied and the more I've researched, the more I've realized how far away from what we were, we've become. And it isn't my responsibility to protect, as a father, to protect and to provide my for my family, but also to hand them a place that's better off when I leave it than was when I got here. And the we're what is it? And I kind of laugh at the left in this sense. We're handing them $20 trillion in debt. And people laugh that off like it's a credit card bill you can file Chapter 11 on. And I would argue that, you know, having my license to carry has been something over the last 2 years that I've actually been gratified to have. Like, it's legit now. People are going to watch the premiere of Batman and never coming home. People are going to work. People are going to nightclubs. Tens of hundreds of people in this country and being killed. I mean, it harkens back to me to kind of the Weather Underground in the 60s, in a sense, that there's this enormous anti-establishment push that's violent.
Kurt, I was reading in advance of our interview that you're considering or at least talking about the possibility of getting into doing a serious XM radio show. Is that something that's happening?
No,
where does that stand right now?
I'm going to work for – I'm going to hopefully finish up the negotiation. I'm going to go work for Breitbart, and I'm going to be hopefully doing a daily show from in the morning. On the Breitbart website gets about 2 million visitors a day, and I think we're going to start there and try and kind of grow it out of that. And it'll be a kind of a social life politics kind of a thing. And then I'm going to be launching a sports show, doing kind of a weekly thing and like a weekly wrap in sports with a Boston focus right now because of with baseball.
Mm-hmm.
And then, I've never been as happy as I am now because every conversation I have is around something I'm incredibly passionate about everything, as you probably can tell. I'm not much of a yes-no guy. So I think – and I've done it enough and been on enough to know that I enjoy doing it. I like talking to people. I like talking to people about things that move the needle. And I'm going to be able to Periscope while I'm doing all this stuff too. So that's going to be fun, continue to grow that out because I did a show – I did a Periscope a couple weeks back with the Red Sox were on the West Coast, and at 10 o'clock at night to 2 in the morning, we had 52,000 people watching. Wow. So, you know, there's something going on, and I'm going to enjoy being a part of that.
Kurt Schilling, our guest here on the Ryan Kelly Morning After. Fascinating conversation. Whether you agree with him or disagree with him, I think we're all going to agree he's passionate about it, and we appreciate your time. Thanks for stopping by the show,
all right,
Kurt.
Guys, thank you very much.
Taking it to Kurt Schilling with us here on the Ryan Kelly Morning After. You can imagine probably got, I don't know, Doug, I think, I don't know, in the hundreds of texts during that interview.
And the Democrats will say this guy's a nut job, and the Republicans will say this guy's great.
Best guest ever. Let's see, name of his show, facts are optional. Now, the Plowhawk and the Sea Monster said they found the clip that he's referring to on our fact-checking mission regarding Barack Obama discussing his Muslim faith. What is the background on this, the Sea Monster, if you could, sir?
Well, we actually found two. The first one here appears to be from ABC News in 2008.
And we have that audio?
Coming right up.
All right. Hit the lever, Plowsy.
What I was suggesting, you are absolutely right that John McCain has not talked about my Muslim faith, and you're absolutely right that has not
Christian
come...
Faith.
My Christian faith.
Ooh.
And, well, what I'm saying is that he hasn't suggested that I'm a Muslim.
Okay. I mean, he was talking about what McCain was going to put on him.
If you recall, and I thought this was one of the reasons why I was a fan of John McCain. If you recall, you probably have seen the clip where a woman stands up in an audience at a McCain campaign rally. Do you know what I'm talking about, the cat?
Yes.
And says, you know, he's a Muslim, and John McCain says, listen, we have differences on policies, but he's a good man, he's a family man. And I believe he said he is a Christian. And so that's what that question was in regard to. And so he was speaking there and misspoke when saying, what do you think about John McCain talking about you and being a Muslim? And he said,
right. But he put
saying,
it, I think he also
he was not
put it, yeah.
Well, bringing saying, up as an issue as a compliment to John McCain is how I take
right.
that clip.
And I think what he was saying was he didn't talk like this woman thought I was a Muslim and my Muslim faith. So I don't think that was any admission or even a slip-up in that.
Is there another clip? You guys said there are two clips of the Sea Monster?
Yes, I believe Plowsy will have the background on this one.
This is in 09, and he discusses his Muslim faith as well as his family's.
Okay.
All right, hit the lever, Plowsy.
Assalamu alaikum. Many other Americans have Muslims in their families or have lived in a Muslim-majority country. I know because I am one of them.
Right. Just short and sweet. But I think he mainly in that one talks about his family. I wasn't for sure if he actually
like
admits
a
he's a Muslim.
Obvious clip right there, like, you know, like.
Well, it's a 9-minute clip, and I did not want it to continue and get off track, so that's why I stopped at Cap.
So did he, as it went on, did it sound like he was definitely admitting to being Muslim or no?
Well, it's 9.5 minutes, Doug. I wasn't able to actually cue it up and listen to the full, the full press conference.
But what I took that as is he was saying he lived in a Muslim country.
Play that again, if you would.
And his father was Muslim.
We got that again, Plowsy?
Assalamu alaikum. Many other Americans have Muslims in their families or have lived in a Muslim-majority country. I know because I am one of them.
Right.
I am one of the Muslims or I am one of the families?
One of the people that lived in a Muslim family. Or
yeah, but you could see how people could interpret
yes,
that to say I'm one of
but
them.
But my thing is that to me, look, am I more conservative than liberal? Yes. But what bothers me is when people are like, "There it is, he admitted it." It's a distraction from bigger issues that I have with. I don't think I disagree that he's been a great president. I have issues with him the way he conducts, you know, the office of the presidency. I'm not going to get caught up on little YouTube clips and even like looking for that smoking gun. Makes people that have legitimate, in my opinion, legitimate gripes about the way he's handled the country's affairs, make him look like wing nuts.
Yeah, so, you know, I mean, throughout, you know, when we have guests on, I handle the things differently than if it's the three of us discussing or if the Sea Monster were to chime in or Plowhawk or, you know, Charlie's and whomever, whatever, it doesn't matter. Give them the forum to discuss their things, and if their opinions differ from mine, God bless them, the open marketplace of ideas. I try to subscribe to that. I don't know how flawlessly I do it, but I try to subscribe to it to allow people to speak, and not, we're going to get into a shouting match on cable news. However, the time where I will step in, when Stacey Dash said, the president doesn't love the country, well, I'm going to say, well, what do you base that on? And when Kurt Schilling says, he talks about his Muslim faith, you know, where do you get that from? What, you know, and he says, oh, there's a clip. It's easy to find. Okay, let's find it. And so there are the two clips. And so, you know, his opinion's one thing. Fact-checking is another. And I would do that if it were somebody presenting something from the left as well. So he's welcome to express his opinions from my standpoint, even if I disagree with him. Doug disagrees with him. The cat disagrees with him. Whoever. But as far as facts, if those are the two clips he's referring to, the cat, I gather you would agree with me that hearing the context, we know what was going on there, and it's an attempt to go, oh, see, but it wasn't really.
And again, unless there's some, but I read a lot. I don't, you know, well, you watch Fox News. No, I read a lot. I read Real Clear Politics that has the same article written from different perspectives. And I think if there was something like that, I would have read more about it, or especially coming from the perspective that I'm not a fan of President Obama. Not personally. I have no, you know, I don't think he's. What the right side tries to put on, like he's an evil guy or anything. I just think we could run the country better.
Caller Ellen saying, even if you think Obama is a Muslim and he's not, and keep in mind, just for the record, since I feel like everybody needs to have their R or D under their name when they speak, Caller Ellen would certainly fall in the R category. Would he really say so in a presidential campaign or when he is a president, or when he's president? It would be different if someone found a clip from 1979. This only weakens the folks who are against Barack Obama. That's from Caller Ellen.
Has he been asked point blank what his religion is?
Yes.
Yeah.
And he's responded.
He's a Christian. Yes, if you remember the Reverend Wright, that was not at a mosque. That was at a church in 2008. All right, we're at the top of the hour. We've got to take a break. Sailor Jerry, sponsor of the radio program, the official spiced rum of the Ryan Kelly Morning After. Send your emails in and your texts in because we have huge prizes here. Two tickets, 7 rows behind the Padres dugout. For the second game today, the 7:15 game, and then for email of the day, 2 tickets behind the Padres dugout, 7 rows up. So these are incredible seats. The morning after at InsideSTL.com. This is Ryan Kelly Morning.